Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I just, this mic arm just actually fell over as I said that.
You just brought the intensity so hard. You just blew it right over.
Yeah, and it's actually going to take like a lot of time to kind of screw it back in, so I'm just going to hold it for the entirety of the podcast.
Hold on. So in the, remember when the guy in those Lightning Rider warriors of Lo Pan's and Big Trouble in Little China, when the one guy got upset and he started yelling, did wind start blowing? Like, is it like you got mad and you blew over the microphone?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Like, before he explodes, is he going, and you're like, his face is like blowing up and his steam coming out of his nose. Was he like blowing really hard? Was stuff flying around, or am I making that up? No, wait, I think stuff was coming out of his, I think he was sucking everything in.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he was getting big. Yeah. Because that's impressive. It can blow everything out and then get big. I just imagine that's what Lazabeth did over there.
I don't know my own strength. But it's okay, though, because I'm a man. I'm going to tough it out. I'm going to hold my mic.
Like, you kind of look like Burt Bacharach right now on a lounge stage.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The way you're holding it. I want you to be like, thank you.
Thank you.
At the airport. Thank you. Going to a plane and headed to another airport. Thank you. Thank you. Once I get off that airplane, I get onto another airplane and go to another airport. Thank you.
Mark Hoffmeyer, say hi to everybody.
You know, something's really been eating at me, guys.
You should get that looked at.
Okay. Oh, it's like the cabin fever flesh-eating virus. No. So I went and watched Star Trek Beyond, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun film with some great bits and some decent gags. And but there's one thing. There's a scene where Kirk and Bones are chilling, and Bones steals like a 30-year-old Glenfiddich from Chekhov's locker. These guys are on the third year of a fifth-year journey thereabouts, and you can't get 30-year-old Glenfiddich anywhere. So this guy had a wonderful bottle of scotch in his locker, and a guy just stole it from him. Like. Mm-hmm. All right, listen, if I got, like, some Chivas, you know what I'm saying? If I got some Dewars, you know what I mean? If I got some Jim Beam, sure, take it out of my locker, all right? But where are you going to find 30-year-old Glenfiddich in space?
Well, that's fair, but at least it came with the irony that they thought that Chekhov would have been a vodka guy.
No, such like, and that's 3 years in, and they're saying that. Nobody knows Chekhov.
So, wait, hold on, though. Now, and I agree, this is, like, villainous alcohol theft. Right?
I would be Tampa windmilling. I would be running through the hallways with my fists like a windmill, punching people out.
Well, hold on. Remember when they did that and they poured it and they had the one glass that neither of them were drinking, thinking of his father?
Yeah.
He was looking for something really, really special because he knew that Kirk was thinking about his father's death.
You know what? If I was Chekhov, I'd be like, listen, I don't care. You didn't ask me. There's literally no other bottles of this in this universe that we're in this galaxy. There is none of this. And you went in my locker without talking to me. I don't know how you got in my room. You probably saw some weird stuff in my closet, and now it's going to be weird between us. And you took my scotch.
Well, look. Okay, let's just agree that that was horrible. But wouldn't it have been worse if Kirk and Bones simply ran out of beer and grabbed the first alcohol that they found recklessly, and it was that, and they were already drunk on Coors Light, and they were just, and then they started drinking that.
You know what? Because I would have taken that as an apology. They'd be like, listen, man, we were drunk. Our vision was blurry. You know how I get on five schlitzes, you know? Like, I'd be like, you know what? You guys were drunk. You didn't know how special this bottle was. These guys were sober as a bicycle, and they stole his scotch.
You know, that reminds me, I feel like 50 episodes ago, we agreed that, that at some point in time we would do an alcohol-themed podcast, and we still haven't. But whenever we get around to it, that's going to be one of the items that we go through.
You know, why? You know, like Ron Burgundy would shoot somebody if they did
He would straight up shoot him. He would, yeah.
You don't, why? Like, that's, like, everyone in the theater is like, oh. And I'm like, no, he stole very expensive liquor.
It was.
Like, that's not like, hey, surprise. Like, and they didn't even, like, and the little guy never even, they never told him. Because it's like, what if when the ship is going down, right? And he, and Chuck, and Chekhov's like, I just want some of my scotch.
Well, look. I'm gonna make a joke in very poor taste, but then after the adventure was over, Chekhov was thinking, I'd really love to get some of that Glenfiddich, and then he put his car in park and was getting.
Oh, no.
And then later Bones is like, well, we don't have to tell him now.
I'm a huge Anton Yelchin fan. Oh my gosh, Fright Night. Oh my, like crazy. His parents are pressing charges.
Thomas, yeah. Like, he's pretty great, I think, too.
His parents are pressing charges on you.
I know. There's going to be some crazy lawsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I was watching the movie, and I'm curious.
John Lovegood, say hi to everyone.
Hey, hi, everybody.
Yeah.
So while I was watching that movie, I got a little bummed for a reason that had nothing to do with the movie, and that was when Chekhov had a scene where he was on screen for a little over 90 seconds at a time. Remember when they were running through the ship? That was at a big angle,
yeah.
Kirk. And so they had that long set of scenes, and he's on the screen for over a minute at a time for a while instead of 10 seconds at a time. And I just kind of realized, like, oh no, like the next Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
I actually stopped and got distracted from the movie thinking, like, how are they going to replace him? Like, I don't want them to replace him, but I want more Star Trek movies, and I felt very conflicted
about
it.
Well, J.J. Abrams has already come out and said, well, you know, they're not going to recast Chekhov, but they don't really know what they're going to do. Like, it's still kind of up in the air. But they do know for sure they're not going to recast the character.
So. Good, because that would bother me a lot.
Sure.
And you know what didn't bother me, though, is that the other day, like I do, I watched a totally weird movie. I sat down to watch Cannibal Holocaust.
As you do.
Wait, you don't just say that casually. You know, like,
yeah, you do if you're John Lovegood.
The other day I wrestled the alligator.
Listen, there's a good connection, though. So a couple of podcasts ago, I think it was like 66 or 65, we had a listener question about B-movie bodybuilders. And Mark, you had brought up that movie called The Barbarians that had those twin goofy, hokey bodybuilders.
Yeah.
Well, the dude who directed Cannibal Holocaust also directed The Barbarians.
What?
I'm not kidding. They're just like 4 years apart from each other. So after he did like this controversial movie where he was literally brought into a courtroom until he could prove that he didn't kill certain actors on screen and made an actual snuff film, he then thought, I guess he thought, well, I don't really want to go to jail for the next intense extreme movie that I do, so I'm just going to cast these two Nimrod twin bodybuilders in this goofy fantasy movie.
Jeez Louise.
It's the same guy. It's Ruggero Deodato is his name. I said it like it's Japanese, but he's Italian. Ruggero Deodato. There, now it sounds Italian.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Ruggero Deodato.
Yeah. Right, that sounded a little Japanese.
Yeah. But by the way, same director. How weird. Like, I was just looking this guy up after I watched the movie, and I'm like, The Barbarians? Really?
Wow.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, okay. that was a super lengthy intro.
Yeah. A very informative intro.
We covered about eight movies.
We covered recent movie release, we covered an interesting movie connection, and we covered some news.
And the whole time I was just wrestling with this mic arm.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's time to start the podcast like we usually do with listener questions. Mark, I think you have listener questions this week.
Yep, the first one is from Vic. I was actually in I worked at Comic-Con in Columbus, Ohio this past weekend, and I asked some of the people I worked with for questions. I told them about, you know, what we were talking about, and some of the questions were about that, and some of them weren't. So the first one is, Stan Lee called Tony Stark Tony Stank
and it was the best thing ever.
And Captain America Civil War. What other superhero names could you mess up?
So Rorschach is an easy one to mess up if you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
It's Rorschach Redemption.
Mr. Rorschach.
Rorschach. Maybe that's why he's so angry all the time.
Yeah. It's Rorschach.
Rorschach. Sure?
Radio Shack?
Yeah.
And it's Mr. Radio Shack here?
Yeah.
I got a good one for me. Like, so people hated this one, but it made me laugh. So I like Professor 10.
Wait, what?
Who? Professor 10?
Who's that?
Professor X.
Professor Ken?
10.
10.
Oh, 10. I didn't even
know. Oh.
Professor 10, that's terrible. Who did that?
No, me. I just said, okay. Like, I thought that was funny.
I thought you actually heard that somewhere.
I thought it made me. And then also, instead of Star-Lord, someone calls him Stan-Lord.
Like, Stan-Lord.
Remember when he goes, I'm Star-Lord. Then Jaimin Huntsu's like, ooh.
Ooh.
So imagine if they're like dropping a package off and he's like, Mr. Stan-Lord.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's Star-Lord. No, it says Stan-Lord.
So I know an entomologist named Nathan Lord, and that Stan-Lord just sounds like his cousin.
Yeah. Stan-Lord's not in Radio Shack.
So I was thinking about this, and I was having a lot of difficulty, and I kept thinking about things that weren't superheroes instead of superheroes. Like, when you saw the new Godzilla movie, and they called the Mothra creature Muto, did you think that they just mispronounced Mothra? I mean, Muto meant something. It did. But, like, isn't it weird that the thing that it meant happened to sound suspiciously similar to a mispronounced Mothra?
So it's like a Uma Oprah, David Letterman. 1994 Oscars Academy Awards performance.
But, like, the whole time I was watching that, I was just giggling every time they said, the Muto. And I'm just like, Mothra? That's Mothra, right?
Yeah, I fully admit to thinking to myself when I was watching that movie, like, wait. Have I been pronouncing it wrong all these years? Is it Muto?
If you want to look it up, it's Godzilla versus Muto?
Oh, man.
So then I thought of another weird one. This goes way, way, way back, and this is just a humorous little, like, memorial to my father, I guess. But, like, way back in the 90s, whenever Armageddon came out, I guess that was, like, 98, 99. So my dad was a neuro-oncologist. He published on multiple sclerosis and stuff. Like, he's a smart guy. And we watched the trailer for Armageddon before whatever movie we were there to see. And he looks at me and he says, Armageddon. That's what he said. Did I tell you the story?
No, I used to say that.
Julie's guessing my shit. No, for real. He looked at me and I'm like 17. He's like, do you want to see that? Armageddon? And I just look at him like he's insane. I'm like, Armageddon. Dad. But wait, so I went to a website though because I couldn't find a good superhero to ruin pronunciation wise, right? And I'm going through the superhero page. No shock, I didn't find what I wanted. But did you know that on the superhero database, which is a website, Chuck Norris is listed? So I just like stopped and stared. So that's my answer to which superhero names would you mess up is Chuck Norris and Muto.
Well, it could be Charles Norris.
Charles.
Wait, is Chuck Norris DC or Marvel?
I don't know. It was just a superhero database.
It's CN.
Charles Norris.
Like, if at any point Garfield wore a cape, I'll bet Super Garfield would have been on that database.
Right. Oh, man.
So, okay, the answer to that is Charles Norris.
And Professor 10.
Yeah.
And Professor 10. Oh, my God, that's a good segue into the next question.
That's right. Who is your this one is from Mark. And who is your favorite character that has a number in their name? And I got to go, guy. I think the best one to me is number 2 from Austin Powers.
Who does number 2 with?
It does two things. He's the number 2 to Dr. Evil. And also it plays for a great poop gag. You know what I mean? Like number – it's perfect. It's like, it's like a joke in it, two jokes. There's number 2 and then there's number 2.
Yep, back in episode, I say back like it was a long time ago. In 2 weeks ago, when we did episode 66, the Summer Olympics episode, we had that whole thing about the urinals and John Crapper and the history of, and we were talking about number two. Number two is becoming a recurring theme for us.
Yeah, that's right. But but I just love. It's like it's smart though. That's the thing. Like. It builds to a poop gag, but number two, he's literally the number two on the list. So it's like, I love when, like, on Raising Arizona, when that kid wrote fart on the wall. Like, I love smart usages of, like, fart and number two jokes. Like,
well, I mean, I love stupid usages of fart, but a smart usage of fart is gold.
Yeah, yeah. I love, you know, there's that movie Out Cold where a guy poops in a cup. That's pushing it. That never worked for me. But that
one drunk dude, one cup.
Wait, Robert Wagner was in that too. Oh no, that was Lee Majors.
Yeah.
Dang it.
I was about to say that. But Mark.
You know, in the 90s, I thought they were the same guy.
Yeah, might as well.
So I honestly thought that you were going to say 11 from Stranger Things, but I was thinking of Stranger Things in 11, and then I thought, like, holy crap, Weapon 11. Of course, I hated Weapon 11 in the Wolverine Origins, which was when they kind of Deadpooled Wade Wilson and made him the fake Deadpool that never happened in the comics.
Yeah.
And but then I thought, but I do love Deadpool, and he is like the Weapon X project. He's the next Weapon.
Wait, you mean Weapon 10?
Right, Weapon 10, Wolverine. And like I realized there are a couple of the ones. Like there's the Jet Li the one, and there's the Neo the one.
I'd hate to be called the one.
Like,
it's a lot of pressure.
I'd like to be like the six.
The six?
Cause like, you know, one's gotta get in there, two's gotta get in there, three's gotta get in, you know, number two, you don't want to be number two. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like number three, that's like an eraser. Right. That's number two. You know, number four doesn't work. Number five, I don't dig it. Like number six is kind of like, he's a cool guy. He's not in the top five.
Hey, before he was given a name by Steve Guttenberg, Johnny Five in Short Circuit was simply number five.
Yeah.
Oh, that was actually my pick or my answer.
No way.
Well, I mean, it's not like a big field to choose from, so.
I'm more of a prophet and less of a podcaster today.
Yes. I want Lazvath to start going, Los Lobos kick your butt. Yeah. Los Lobos kick your face. Los Lobos kick your balls into outer space. And what about 006, 007?
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that.
Sean Bean.
That's true.
So I didn't pick 007 because I thought it was too obvious, and I didn't pick 006. Mark, because I thought you'd pick 006. You've written a couple articles about 006.
I've written fan fiction about 006.
Yeah, it got pretty weird.
Wait, so Laz, you were going to pick?
Johnny number five.
Johnny five? Why? Yeah.
It's just like the only one I could think of, if I were to be completely honest.
John was like on his way from dinner tonight to the podcast.
Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, I got to answer some questions. Johnny number five. Wait, wasn't Wally, wasn't that like originally like some kind of model number?
Oh, like, yeah.
I forgot what it was, but I guess that maybe works.
Six.
Oh, what about V from V for Vendetta?
Oh, yeah.
Can we just say like five for Vendetta?
Wait. Was she like the fifth mercenary or something? I don't even remember how.
No, he was V. Did all this stuff, yeah.
He was V, but you know, maybe it's Roman Norman.
Was it meant to stand for five, or was it meant to stand for a word?
Well, because four doesn't look cool. Yeah. Like V looks the coolest, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to graffiti. Like, if I was four, I'd be so pissed.
But I'm asking, was he V the letter, or was he V the Roman numeral?
Roman numeral.
He was?
Yeah.
Why was he? Were there others?
I mean, listen. Like I said, imagine if you were eight and you had to spell that out like that. It would take forever. I think he cheated. I think he was like, yeah, there was Hank, Phil, Bill, and Jill, and I'm number five.
I I need to watch this movie again and make some sense of this.
Well, you know, there's a track with Watchmen, Constantine, and V for Vendetta on Blu-ray. That's like,
you know, why I don't like triple packs and double packs is because I can't sort them in my movie collection.
I just do it by the first one.
So I only buy multi-packs if, like, they're all Sylvester Stallone movies, all Jackie Chan movies, all Van Damme movies, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
Right. That, listeners, that's how you should do it. That's
all the
way.
All the goots.
So what's the answer for this question, you think?
The goots.
The goots.
That Hugo Weaving cheated.
There we go.
Yeah, Jill, Bill, Dill, and Grill.
You know, there's also a V in Hugo Weaving's name. So it's yes. It's all connected.
And a U sort of looks like a V.
Yeah. Yeah, just...
He's like, it's V, and like shaved head Natalie Portman is like, so what's the V for? He says it's short for Hugo Weaving. Yeah. She says,
wow, that's really short.
It's like, shouldn't it be an H or a W? Nah. He's like, yeah, but a V is half a W. That's even shorter for the W.
And she's like, call me O.
But how do you get Hugo Weaving from that? I don't understand.
Because there's a V in it.
There's a V in a lot of things.
Yeah, listen. There's not a V in John.
I got tired of spelling Hugo Weaving on every place that I mark. A V is a lot easier.
Okay.
You know, like, if he was you know how Batman spent, like, 2 days in Dark Knight Rises doing that Batman logo on the wall, then lighting it on fire? Yeah. Like, a V would have spent, like, 6 minutes.
Yeah. Done.
If I was a superhero, it would just be a snake. I'd be the snake, because I could just go, like, zippy lines everywhere.
Right. Oh, all right. thank you once again to our wonderful listeners for those amazing listener questions. Sorry we didn't answer the questions the way you wanted it, but hey, maybe you should pay attention to podcasts.
That's right, the goots.
Right. All right, on to the topic of the day. I think it's on me today, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. So, I guess...
There's a V in Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, how do you get Hugo Weaving from that?
I just thought that V for Vendetta was about John Lazabeth because there's a V in it.
That's right.
I knew it wasn't about Mark Hoffmeyer.
That's right.
Well, maybe. Mark, no. Okay. All right, so a couple weeks ago, you had Ghostbusters come out. We talked about it on the previous podcast. Check that out. But on the same weekend, Netflix released... a miniseries that was also kind of an 80s throwback, akin to Ghostbusters. But this was probably a little bit more beloved than Ghostbusters was. Although it's not really fair to make that comparison because this is a miniseries and that was a movie. But yeah, Stranger Things was released on Netflix as an 8-episode miniseries written and directed by the Duffer Brothers. And it just kind of set the internet ablaze. Like, everybody on the internet loves it, and for very good reason. Yeah. It was as if, like, Stephen King and Steven Spielberg just, like, got together, did, like, a Twin Peaks marathon, and just did, like, a miniseries based off of that. It was just a love letter to everything about the 80s, and it was amazing.
Yeah. And everyone around the world just got nosebleeds.
Yeah. It's, you know... It's not exaggeration when I say it's the best thing I've seen all year, movie or TV wise.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the best thing I've watched since True Detective season one, and it's on par with Fargo season two. Like, those are like my three favorite things of this decade.
Right.
I've seen True Detective season one, and I gotta agree. Like, both of them were that and this are just like soul-rattlingly awesome.
Yeah. So, Laz, since it's a TV show, why did we decide to talk about it on a movies podcast?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Mark. So, Stranger Things, you know, wears its 80s influences, like, on a sleeve. And it doesn't wear short sleeves. Right? We're talking about, like, long, like, full fur coat parka, like, sleeves here.
Hey, Kool-Aid jacket.
You know, there's, like, a lot of Amblin influences. There's a lot of, like, Stephen King influences. Like, there's a lot of even John Carpenter influences, too. And, you know, it seems appropriate to talk about Stranger Things on a movie podcast because Stranger Things in itself is kind of a, you know, kind of a its own Viewer's Digest of 80s movies, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it would be, You know, there's some articles out there that are like summaries of all the movies that were referenced and stuff like that, and little Easter egg things. Like, I wonder if you put three people in a room who've already seen the show, and now all we're doing, we've already seen the show, is rewatching the show together, just looking for movie references, and we find every movie connection that we can find and give it a timestamp. Do you think that 90 seconds ever passes in that movie where they aren't specifically calling back to another 80s movie?
I would say at least 96 seconds.
Right.
96 seconds is the minimum.
But, like, you know what's crazy? A lot of these things have gone – like, Vulture has the best film reference. If you're looking for that Stranger Things film reference, it's a great one. But Vulture website. And you know, this film has its references, but like we talked about, like you said, Laz, it wears its influences on its sleeve. It's proud. They're literally on the wall with the movie posters.
Yeah.
But it also develops really great characters that you know, overcome the obvious references.
Right.
Like, I know the characters' names, and I have a theory that you like a TV show if you actually remember the characters' names, right? And like I love it. Like I think this show is, and you know, yeah, I thought it was gonna be like some kid show, but it's like a really violent, like it's. I want kids to watch it because I feel like these are the kind of movies we watch when we were kids.
Oh yeah,
you know, as violent as it is, most of the violence was delivered by the urgency of the buildup before the violence and then the event that you know happened. But this movie was not actually gruesome. The show was not actually hard to watch. Like, I feel like I could sit a 10 or 12 year old in front of this who hasn't seen a scary movie, and it would be scary to them, but this is not going to traumatize them. There aren't like guts all over the floor. There's not the most horrific thing you've ever seen. You know what I mean? Like, the scares are in the buildup. The scares are in your anticipation and the weirdness of the situation. I feel like this is an oddly family-friendly, really dark thing.
I mean, people get shot in the head. 11, she blows up those dudes at the end.
You have, like, that monster who just, like, is really, really creepy-looking, just totally, like, just devour people, and it's just like really, really sick. I'm just like, oh,
I feel terrible for Barb.
Oh, poor Barb.
Poor Barb. I know, right? You know, Barb. Who was it Barb? But you know what Barb reminded me of?
Who?
1968. They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Yeah. And it did. And it did. Come to get Barbara. Yeah. And like, she got cut because her friend for like so. You know what? If you're watching this, you've seen the show. If you haven't watched this, you're going to get lost. But there's a scene where her best friend, Nancy, drives her out so she could hang out with her boyfriend, Steve. And Barbara doesn't want to be there. And Barbara's forced to do a, what do you call it? A shotgun of beer. That's where you put a knife in a beer. Then you drink from the bottom when you open up the top. But she cuts herself. And then some blood goes into the pool, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, Barb is waiting for Nancy while Nancy's sleeping with Steve. And Barb gets wiped out by this monster. Like, but it's, I got, you know, a lot of people feel bad for Barb, but the creators are like, we just had to kill people. Like, you know, we had to establish that this world was dangerous. You know, that really great guy in the restaurant that helped Eleven in the beginning, he got shot in the head.
Yeah.
Like, people get wiped out. Like, guards get killed. Eleven snaps dudes' necks. That one guy takes a nap in a great chair. And like,
no,
like,
they had to make the danger real. Otherwise, like, you couldn't feel anything for the characters.
Yeah. You know? And like, this movie, when I was young, I don't know about you guys, but I lived in Florida, and where I lived in like a bunch of adjoining neighborhoods, we could just ride your bike forever. And I had a bunch of buddies, and we would just ride our bikes around and like be outside all day. And that's what, you know, these kids played Dungeons and Dragons, but these kids also kind of went out and did their own thing and didn't have to worry about cell phones and all that. And I don't know. Like, I like movies where kids actually do stuff. Like, they shoot slingshots at monsters. You know, they like ride their bikes everywhere. They hide. Like, I don't know. Like, that. The biggest problem I have is that bully in the show is a psychopath.
Oh yeah. When he had the knife like up to the kid's throat.
He was gonna kill a kid.
Ugh. Yeah, I've never met a kid like that vicious before.
Yeah, and then that mom was like strangely like believing his story about telekinesis breaking his arm.
No, my poor Johnny could never be that vicious. It was definitely a little girl's problem.
Like, he had a knife at that kid's throat or his teeth. He was gonna cut his teeth. Well, not just that. And then what? What's he ask his friend to do? It's like go get wet. He asked him to jump off of a cliff, like over 100 feet. Down into probably the shallow side of a reservoir.
Yep.
Like, that kid would have just outright died.
He would have been jelly.
He would have died from the impact from the water.
Yeah, he just would have, like, he would have stayed on top of the water if he hit so hard.
No matter what, if that kid gets his way, he's getting murder charges. And yet, and for him not to get his way, you have to have a child defy someone else who's threatening to kill his best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that. So there's like no win. That was vile.
And like, I don't know. I liked, I don't know, but I feel like they set up so many good things. And I think my favorite, I had a couple, here are my two favorite plot lines. I liked Chief Jim Hopper. I liked his build up throughout the show. And I also liked that he was just a damn fist fighting legend. Like, he's just like, he was like Indiana Jones, just fist fighting people, man.
He had the
like,
hat. I loved it. He had the hat too.
Yeah, he had the hat, and like he was just blanking dudes out left and right. Like, dude,
and like Indiana Jones, he was not a good morning person after a night of drinking. Like, he was all sloggy when we first meet him. He's like, Joan, mornings are for coffee and contemplation. Yeah. She's like, but Mrs., she's in your coffee and contemplation. Like, he was a regular Joe who was a really tough guy and smart guy when he needed to be, but otherwise he was just getting through his grind before that. It was interesting.
Where the show got me, where, you know, I already liked it. Like, I was just jumping up and down, loving it. But there's a scene where this guy, Benny, I think Benny, gets shot in his restaurant, and one of the deputies in this small town police force asks Hopper, he's like, you know, does this remind you of being a cop in the big city? And Hopper's like, yeah, most of the people I dealt with are strangers. These were my friends. Mm. I was like, whoa, like that was a good line.
Yeah.
Like, if I wrote that line, I would just throw like 6 spin kicks in my in my apartment, you know, like I would quit for the night and I would just go on a Patron binge. Because I don't know, I just love that scene. So, Laz, what did you like?
I think we mentioned him a little bit, but I love all the kids on this show. And I don't mean that in a creepy way. But but no.
Not in a Freddy Krueger way.
Yeah. But, you know, most of the time when you see child actors, like, you can tell, like, I mean, they're child actors. But, like, all the kids on this show, everything just felt so natural. Like, I think what it was that, like, they were just allowed to be kids, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they weren't, like, kind of the kids you see in, like, Disney, like, Disney Channel, where, like, they're all, like, super pretty and, like, you know, whatever. Like, these kids, like, they're, like, super awkward and lumpy looking, like, you know? And they were, like, they acted like kids. They were, like, cursing at each other. They were, like, you know, really, really into Dungeons and Dragons. Like, it was, like, super life and death, which, you know, I guess you can argue that it was.
Yeah.
So, but
and they,
yeah,
and
I just
they weren't totally precocious too.
Yeah, it was just like the chemistry they had was just amazing, really.
Yeah,
it kind of it took me back to like the Goonies and like the Monster Squad.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Sorry to jump on you there. You just got me going. Like, it was just, it felt natural.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of this thing, this show walked a tightrope, but it could have like fallen on its face, but it didn't.
No, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and they took a typical 80s trope and gave it a slight contemporary spin. You know, like in the 80s movies, like Nancy's Mother, or Nancy's Mother in this, but Nancy's Mother in Nightmare on Elm Street, she was divorced, she's busy working. This is what the 80s era of divorce would have, these moms who are working too much. They don't have time for the kids, and the dads with poor communication era aren't around as much in most of these movies. So the kids really are on their own to face the evil, and they don't have good relationships with their parents for their parents to ever even understand something rational to connect to these supernatural entities.
Yeah.
Well, in this, the parents
are built in a framework of that, but the parents are not total idiots. They aren't in total disbelief. They don't think that their kids just need to be medicated to sleep or need to see a psychiatrist. They think something's very wrong that they can't explain, that their kids are being irrational, but they don't treat their kids like insane asylum kids. Mm-hmm. You know, and the parents actually care, and you know that they care, but there's still a little disconnect. Like Nancy's dad.
Oh, gosh.
He was... Like, right, he's out there, but he's not as out there, actually, as any of the dads from the Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
I mean, he's home, and he has good kids.
Yeah.
So
right, I mean, you know, and he doesn't spout swears and call everything bullshit, basically, when the kids do something that he doesn't like. So it's, you know, they took the 80s trope, and they gave it a little, they gave a little more relationship between the parents and the children, though, and a slight bit of credibility.
But let me ask you something, Lazarus.
Please do.
If you had a chair like that, would you parent or would you just sleep in it?
See, so I remember having a Lazy Boy growing up, and, like, I loved that thing. But I just remember it being, like, really, really dirty as hell. So I'm just like, oh, man, I don't know. It was amazing that they had a Lazy Boy in the show. It was so cool. I don't know. Yeah. It was, Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the Lazy Boy, just because. Like, it was a lot of fun.
Sorry to interrupt you, Loving Good.
No, you're good. And, you know, the kids, they did, you know, you mentioned the Goonies, and we talked about E.T. actually in our Olympics. Like, these kids were a mix of the Goonies and our E.T. kids, kind of, BMXing around in their hoodies. Goonies Forever or Goonies Never Say Die. It was kind of like that.
Yeah.
The way that they had that unity. And then they meet Eleven, right? This girl comes into the picture, and in any other movie ever, the girl would divide them because of a romantic interest. Whereas in this, the romantic interest didn't result in dividing people. It didn't come up until way, way later. Mm-hmm. And so it didn't fall into that trope pitfall, right? Like, she was just new and an outsider.
Yeah, and that kid knew, oh man, what was his name? There was Mike, Dustin, Lucas, and Will. Yeah. And one of the kids knew that Eleven knew where Will was, and she wouldn't tell him because it was dangerous, and he was mad about that.
Oh, Lucas,
Yeah, Lucas, if you're a kid, like, that's understandable.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, they called her a weirdo a lot. That seemed against them because they weren't mean kids.
Yeah.
But I've never met a psychic, bald person named Eleven.
I never lived in the movies Carrie, Firestarter, or what was it?
Yeah.
The Friday the 13th part 5 or 6 that had the telekinetic chick.
Yeah. And like, but she was still like that actress was.
Oh, Millie Brown. Millie Brown. Yeah.
And she had like the most emotive face I think I've ever seen without talking.
Does she remind you of Natalie Portman from The Professional?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, she looks a lot like her, obviously, but I think she's. Acting wise, like, she's kind of on the same level a little bit, right?
Yeah, I don't even know how she did it. just the expressions that she has.
Oh, like, I think she had to do like the most heavy lifting on the show.
She had to cry and be dunked in the tanks and like that was a lot of work for her. Like, putting a weird wig.
Oh, but the scenes where like she's like in the Upside Down, where it's basically just all black. Like,
oh yeah,
and it was just her basically. So she had to be like. Especially like emotive, like throughout her body language, and I was just like, "Wow, this is like really good acting right now."
And also, it brought that. That's from that movie Under the Skin, which came out in 2014, and it's on Amazon Prime. It's really good, but I didn't know what to expect from this film or this show, and it.
You know what? I think it's okay to call it a film.
Yeah, there we
why
go.
Not? Let's just call it a film.
And. I have a question for you guys.
Yes.
Jonathan or Steve?
Oh.
I'm going to go with Jonathan.
I'm going Steve.
I mean, I like the way that Steve turned around. Like, Steve did, like, he went from, should we trust him? Oh, we should trust him.
But that was that was a really quick 180, though. Like, for, like, two-thirds of the series, like, you're just being led to hate him. But then, like, the very last second, it's like, oh, hey, he's a good guy. You should like him. I'm like, why? No, I spent all this time hating him.
But he was like a conflicted kid, though. He wiped that stuff off the thing, and like he liked her. Like he was just kind of like he was just
he was a
punk, but I don't think he was like
he just had that really he had that really punchable face. Like I was so glad when Jonathan was just beating up on him.
But like Jonathan was kind of a creeper though. Like those pictures he took and he never atones for those. He's never just like, yeah, that was weird. Like listen, he was just like, I saw you and I just saw somebody who didn't want to be there and I just kept taking pictures and you're like, bruh.
Dude, he was pulling like an American Beauty with like, why did you film that dead bird? Because it was beautiful.
Yeah, but they never explain it from there. And like I think it would have been too easy. So they actually went the John Hughes route and like broke all the underdog's hearts.
Hold on now, like Steve and Nancy sleep together and right afterwards you expect him to be a dickwad and he wasn't.
Yeah.
And he got like really jealous. Like
and she was nervous that now that she gave it up that he was gonna be a dick. And he wasn't.
Yeah. It wasn't until he was given whether or not it was justified by someone's opinion, it wasn't until he was given a reason to distrust her interest in him that he turned into a real dick. And listen, then he went over the top. But
I'm gonna tell you who really got shafted by Nancy.
Uh-oh.
It was Dustin. You remember in the first episode? He tried to give her like the rest of the pizza and she was like, no, get out of here.
Yeah,
I felt bad for him.
So hard.
Yeah.
It was a nice move though. He just wanted to give her some pizza.
Yeah. He's trying hard for like a toothless kid.
That was the 80s. They weren't so worried about carbs and gluten, so that was especially a tough stiff arm. Like nowadays, if a girl did that, you just be like, you know, oh, she, you know, she's counting her macros. I get it. No gluten. I understand.
She's on a paleo diet, so.
Yeah, like she could be doing the paleo thing.
Yeah.
She could be a pescatarian. I don't know. But back in the 80s, none of that crap existed really. Mm. So it's like, she's just rejecting me.
I think now's a good time for me to order a pizza.
Yeah.
All this pizza talk is getting me kind of hungry. But, we'll take a break for a quick message, and we'll be right back.
Domino's.
Hey, podcast listeners. Robert here, along with Kyle.
What's up?
And John.
Hey.
We're here to talk to you about a little podcast that we do called Shark Dropper.
Yeah.
What do we talk about in Shark Dropper?
Oh, all kinds of things. Kyle, name one of them.
Oh, geez, walking across America.
John, name another.
Ooh, video games.
No, we never talk about that.
Yeah, that's stupid.
So if you want to listen to Shark Dropper, don't listen for the video
games. We talked about video games last week.
You know what? Just don't listen to John at all.
John, just don't listen to him talk.
Okay.
Yeah. that's a good rule of thumb.
But if you want to listen to me and Kyle talk, along with John intermittently, but really don't listen to that part.
Hi, guys.
Go visit sharkdropper.com because you can find everything there.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I just finished off a large Supreme pizza from Domino's. And I had the stuffed cheesy bites. And I also had the chocolate lava cake.
Oh, gosh.
This podcast has not been brought to you by Domino's.
But if Domino's would like future episodes to be brought to you by Domino's, just send us a check.
I would podcast for free Domino's pizza. You don't even have to pay me money. Just give me pizza.
I was asking that from Red Bull for like 5 or 10 episodes, and not once did Red Bull appear at my doorstep. And that's why I stopped talking about the Red Bull that I was having.
Did you ever tweet at them? Like, maybe that's the key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever – this is actually
– Hold on. Domino's and I'm making a note. Starting tomorrow, the Twitter campaign begins. Domino's and Red Bull.
Yeah.
So we taped John eating all of that, and that's going to be episode 30 of Lazavath Eats on Shark Dropper. And it's basically you you know how you listen to rivers and streams and brooks and thunderstorms and rain? We have one
like those tranquil soundtracks.
Yeah, you can go to bed listening to Lazavath eat.
Yeah.
That sounds disgusting.
Oh, I am working on a special holiday episode where I have guest Nick Offerman. Like, we both drink whiskey in front of a fireplace together.
Nice.
I'm working on it.
Nice.
I will say, though, that John is a very sensitive chewer, and it's not overbearing. There's very few smacks.
I chew when I need to. Like, I never overchew or never underchew. The food is always appropriately macerated.
Yeah, you don't, like, go, like, 60 chews. You know what I'm saying? You just go until it feels right.
Yeah.
I feel like out of the last 7 podcasts, maybe, I was absent for 2 of them traveling.
or at least two of them, and you guys made fun of me on two different episodes for my eating. Like, I was eating my way through the Northeast.
That's what happens when you're not on the podcast, man.
Well, it's true, though. Every picture we see is like, I'm eating a double brisket pizza at 9 a.m. Like, what? Where are you getting a double brisket pizza at 9 a.m.?
You save me some. Seriously.
He ate so much the night before, he fell asleep in the restaurant, woke up, made himself a double brisket sandwich. Yeah. Would you say no to me?
All right. Speaking of overeating, it's time to answer some more listener questions. Yeah, that was kind of a weird segue. I'm going with it, though. Mark, give me another listener question.
If this one's from Kristen, and it says, what movie monster has legitimately, literally, 100% frightened you?
Ooh.
Okay, I got this. Okay. So these go way back for me, but I still get a little – you know, like when you watch an older movie, like – wait, I got to preface this right. Like a random movie from the 80s. Now, if you watched it for the first time today, you'd probably be like, that's not scary. But that same movie, if you saw it when you were 10 back then, it would have been scary to you, right? And because it was scary to you then, when you watch it now again, you kind of – feel that. You remember the way that you felt when you first saw it. So it still feels scary, even though it doesn't make you jump anymore. And so, like, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the things that still give me that shiver, even though they don't make me jump. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was Freddy and the first Nightmare on Elm Street. Only the first one. And that one, he was scary to me, right? With his laugh, and he only had like 7 minutes of screen time. So when you saw him, he was always doing creepy crap and like cutting off his own fingers and the screeches, the slinky arms in the alley. That was scary. And like in the movie The Gate, the demons in The Gate scared the crap out of me. 1987 with Stephen Dorff back when he was a kid. Like there were the little midget demons. They were horrifying, right? And then there was the dead man who was buried in the wall of the house. That was terrifying when that thing came out. And then there was the phone demon, and that was terrifying. I'm telling you, these things were scary. And like, and people, I see people like podcasters and people on their websites who just saw that movie for the first time recently, and they just laugh at how stupid it is. And I'm like, you shut up. That was horrifying.
Yeah.
Like to me back then. And then in Poltergeist 2, when Craig T. Nelson vomited out a limbless, skinless zombie of the ghost Kane. That was terrifying. Do you remember that? He drank the worm and the tequila, and the worm was a possessed ghost worm. And then Kane, the ghost man, developed inside of him, and he vomited out a full torso.
Gross.
It was terrifying. Those were terrifying, terrifying things that you could laugh at now.
What about you, Lad?
All right, so I definitely agree with Living Good. Like, Freddy. But also you have the Michael Myers, like, you know, Jason, like all the classic ones. But there's, like, another one that's, like, not really, you know, as, like, celebrated, I guess. I'm going with Sam Neill from Event Horizon. I don't know why it scared me so much, but, like when his character came back from hell or the other dimension, and he was, like, he looked like his skin had just been turned inside out, and like he was like talking like he was possessed. Like that scared the crap out of me. I'm like, oh my god, like,
dude, where we're going, you won't need eyes to see the suffering.
he's like such a great actor too. So it's just like, I was a little kid when I was watching this. Like, I don't want to go there. Like, don't go there. Save me, Lawrence Fishburne.
You're my only hope.
Yeah.
Use the kung fu. Use the kung fu.
Well, you know what got me?
Yeah.
All right. So everyone knows the obvious, the troll Trantor from Ernest Scared Stupid. Gave me nightmares.
We're going to talk about that.
All right. So I'm not going to go too far into this, but literally gave me, I keep saying literally. Yeah, it did. It gave me nightmares for months. I was 100% scared because everything I did in that show, like the troll, I would dress up for Halloween. I would ride my bike. I would, you know, look under my bed. Like everything I did, that troll would have gotten me. But one thing when I was younger that really freaked me out too. Not as much as a troll, but was Gary Oldman from Bram Stoker's Dracula in the beginning when he was like in that old man makeup.
Oh.
Like when you're young and you see that, like he's all this like weird and gross.
Yeah.
And even remember when there was the cut while shaving, and when he turned around, it wasn't that he turned around and licked the blade for the blood. It was the way he did it.
Oh, gosh, I got chills. Oh, gosh.
Like, he was such a weird, twitchy, and you could tell that he was just, like, in a weird, like, olfactory ecstasy licking that blood. So,
yeah, that, like, oh, man, I got chills. They're multiplying, and I'm losing control. See, like, that messed me up as a kid. Just seeing that, like, and then that scene with the wolf, like, that whole movie, I haven't watched it recently, but I feel like it's like a Sleepy Hollow in terms of looking beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Just the production design and sets and everything. But that creepy Gary Oldman, that in Prometheus, he loves doing old man makeup.
He just, he's such a great character actor. Like, he completely disappears in the character. Like, really one of the most underrated actors working today.
Jean-Baptiste Zorg.
Yeah.
Oh.
One time, he actually disappeared into character, and the camera couldn't pick him up.
Yeah.
He was so good on Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, they just went invisible.
Was he the Tinker or the Tailor? Oh, he's a soldier.
Well, he was thinking, a spy. No one could hear it. I know Gary Oldman's in here tinking somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, here's a creepy thought. What if one of us is actually Gary Oldman right now?
What a weird thing. What if one of us is Gary Oldman? I'm Gary Oldman.
Well, the thing is, like, he's so good at playing other characters. Like, maybe he's really good at impersonating, like, one of our voices right now.
Yep.
You wouldn't know.
And when I was 12, he really intimidated me in the Professional.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone or everybody.
It was everyone, yeah.
I was like, and he was all like weird and murderous. Like, you know what, Gary Oldman? Screw you. You wrecked my youth.
But he was a great Jim Gordon, though.
Oh, yeah. He was good.
Yeah. All right. Can we just say Gary Oldman is the answer to that question?
Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
To what movie monster?
We should say, to me.
Everybody.
Hey, guys. Mark left the building. It's Gary Oldman here. Oh. Any questions about my movie?
You're pretty good, man.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Yeah. Tiptoes.
All right. So I think it's time to go back to the topic of the day, and that's Stranger Things. I think there's still a couple things left to discuss, a couple good things. I think one topic I wanted to talk about is Winona Ryder. Like, I don't know how you
and
guys...
How much you loved her performance?
Yes, yes. I think, you know, she comes a close second to Millie Brown. Like, Millie Brown did, like, the most lifting. But, you know, Winona Ryder, she was, like, doing deadlifts and squats, like, right behind her. You know, she came in like a close second. She was playing like the distressed mom, like, and she was freaking out. Like, everybody thinks she's crazy, and like you know, like, she's not crazy, but you understand why everybody else thinks she is. And like, she was just like, played such a great sympathetic character. Like, I just, yeah, it was just really, really great acting on her part, just throughout.
I love the AV recap, so I've been reading them all. And the woman who wrote it in the first episode, she hated the Winona Ryder character because she thought she was all quirky and jabby and nervous and everything. But as the show wore on, she was like her favorite character. Like, it's interesting how your perception of her changes, because this is a woman who, you know, she is nervous. She has two kids, and her oldest son didn't listen to her. In the beginning, Jonathan worked instead of being home for his brother.
Right.
I remember that. Like, she's worked at this job for 10 years, never missed a day. So she's good at, you know, the kids get what they need. She likes her kids, you know, that she lets them kind of be independent.
Yeah.
You know, she had to deal with a terrible husband, but I like how at the end she tries to fight the thing. She sits there with like an axe.
Yeah.
And she wants to save her son no matter what the deal is. And I like that she never quits. And I love her scenes with Eleven towards the end where she's like, I'm going to be there for you.
Yeah.
And like, I was just like, oh.
Like, she was such a fighter. Like, she was there in the Upside Down with Hopper. Like, what are you doing? Like, oh, I mean, like, this is my kid. Like, I'm going to get him. I'm like, oh, this is so cool.
That was, in my opinion, that was her one scene of distinct weakness, though. Like, even though it took a lot to get her under there, he's like, all right, we've got to be quiet. And then something happens. She just starts shrilling. Like, if I was him, I would just knock her out.
Yeah, but to be fair, if you were in the under upside down, would you, like, she's brave, but she's never, I mean, she's in over her head. She's not Liam Neeson, like, taking stuff. You know what I mean? She's not like, give me back my girl. And then the monster's like, good luck. And she's like, I'll find you and I'll kill you.
But I mean, that was the scene where her recklessness endangered lives.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
You know what I mean? Whereas before, her recklessness was a mix of desperation and determination to get her child back. Whereas when she went over there, she went to mania and risked hers and Hopper's life. And in effect, her child's life, because that was a risk to everybody.
Yeah.
That was a risk to rescuing them. That's why that scene like annoyed me in a way that it probably was meant to annoy me. But like when that was happening, I was just like, punch her in the face, just backfist her. Why do you want a woman to get hit? To silence her because she's yelling in an underworld that they don't know, where there's this creature that's potentially eating people. Yeah. That's why.
How else could they find him?
By like, knocking
time was running around.
Well, first off, it found them because she was screaming. Oh, it knew where it didn't have it decided whether or not it crawled up to them because it knew exactly where they were.
I mean,
it wasn't screaming.
The upside down's a big place.
Yeah.
They knew their boy was dying, so she's like, you know what? I'm gonna gamble. And she had she had a fist fighting legend with her.
Yeah. Can I just say, like, she was actually also a part of, you know, not only the scariest scene in the movie / show, but also the most memorable scene. Like,
you mean
when
it came out of the wall?
No, that's a close second. When she's communicating with her son through the lights, and she's like asking him, like, where are you? And then he spells out right here, like, what should I do? And then he spells out R-U-N. I'm like,
dude.
You get chills down your spine? I'm like,
Yeah. I got tingles, but it's not because he said run. It was because when it was first happening, when the lights first started going and she started reading things, I was thinking, wait, is it really him? Or is it an evil entity?
Yeah, that's what people are thinking. They're wondering if Will came back. Will.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know what? Do you want to skip to that? Because that's like.
I do want to talk about one thing.
Please
about
do.
That or something else?
Matthew Modine's hair helmet.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes.
Okay, that hair is. So, you know how I said that I was annoyed with her screaming, but I think that I was meant to be annoyed? Like, I didn't think it was a mistake in the show. You know, it felt like a normal reaction when she was screaming, and I was about to call it the further, in the upside down, I feel like his hair was the only mistake that show made, because that was the only thing in all of the supernatural stuff in the show. It's the only thing that I rolled my eyes at, and I never got used to it.
You know, it kind of looked like, you know, Doc Brown kind of just slicked his hair back.
And I kept waiting for him to take it off and go, and like have another haircut underneath it.
Great Scott!
Wait, great 11.
Wait, no. That doesn't go as well.
You know what I really love about Matthew Modine's character? Like, there was not a lot of ambiguity about his character. Like, oh, that's clearly like the bad guy. You know, he's working for like the government, some shady government like branch, and like he's doing like these really, you know, shady experiments, and he's just like, you never really see like another like, oh, light side to him. He's just like, yeah, that's definitely the bad guy, and I appreciated that. I'm just like, okay, that's the guy I should root against. Like, that's good.
Do you guys want to hear some inside knowledge?
Please.
Okay, so that building that the government facility, that's in Atlanta, and that's where I had my that's where we shot Resurrection, and that's where I had my goon cameo in Resurrection. So I like to think that my goon character worked at this facility.
He might have.
Because there's an episode of Resurrection season 2 where I have to, like, grab Omar Epps' bag and have to stand there looking tough doing blue steel until he gets knocked out. Then I have to carry him away.
Yeah.
And that's the same facility that the 11 was being tested on. So I like to think that Agent Blue Steel
Yeah.
Does contract work?
Oh, do you think he made it out when the monster first escaped the other dimension?
No.
Oh.
So I want to know what level goon your character is, and is his fireball powerful enough to hurt Demogorgon?
So basically, I'm the goon of the goon.
Oh.
Okay. In Resurrection.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, I haven't seen that show.
Oh. Well, there's a goon who works for a goon, and I'm his goon.
I see.
So I'm like,
can you cast fireball?
Like, no, but I could freeze people with my magnum look.
Blue steel.
Yeah,
I don't. Demogorgon might be immune to that. Demogorgon is a demon prince. He's a high level demon prince.
You know, like, I think my character from The Following would have a better chance because my cop character carry a serial killer out of a room with ease.
Okay. And James, was it James Purepoy?
Yeah.
With his dyed black hair, he backfisted you in the chest.
Yeah, elbowed.
Like by accident.
Well, here's the question.
It's only an elbow because you're like a foot taller than him. Yeah.
Well, here's the question, though. Did your character get knocked out by the monster or did he get knocked out by fist fighting legend Jim Hopper?
Oh, fist fighting legend. Okay. I was in the bathroom looking in the mirror.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because I'm Agent Blue Steel, and he just fist fought legend me.
Ugh.
And I actually survived the whole ordeal because I got fist fought legend.
Because Jim Hopper saved your life, right?
Yeah. Well. This fight, you know, he broke my jaw, but he saved my soul.
Yeah.
That's a country song.
By the way,
holy crap.
Am I the only guy here who's played Dungeons and Dragons?
Yes.
Yes. I bought Magic cards because I liked the cards, but I never, that's the closest I've ever come to a game.
Look
a
role good. You game. Should explain the D&D influences.
Yeah. Like I liked how they were using like Dungeons and Dragons to make life decisions in dire situations where when they're talking about splitting up and, oh God, Toothless, what was his name?
Dustin.
And Dustin was saying, like, no, remember when we were in whatever the cave of Mithril Legends or something, and, you know, you want to do this, but we wanted to pursue that, and we split up, and then we all got picked off one by one. We've got to stay together. He used D&D experiences to make a good stick-together Goonies decision. And, like, I thought it was adorable. And they made a few, like, deeper Dungeons & Dragons references that I really enjoyed, and they didn't do it too hard, but I love how they peppered that in. That was the era of it. And
you know what those the main – you know why I never played Dungeons & Dragons? It's because I the years I would have played it, I lived in Florida, and they don't have basements in Florida.
That's true.
I grew up in New Jersey, so, I mean, it just made sense.
Basements galore.
Were you guys all on tank tops?
We're at my house.
We're wearing tank tops.
Right.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
So speaking of the kids in Dungeons and Dragons, there's actually a pretty great article on moviepilot.com. They actually kind of compared all some of the classes from Dungeons and Dragons to the actual kids in the show and how they related to the plot. Mike, was the paladin. He was a fighter who acts in the name of good in order. Will was the rogue. The rogue is very stealthy and good at hiding. It enabled him to hide from the monster in the Upside Down while Barb got killed. Dustin was the bard. The bard has a great way with words and was also very smart and diplomatic. Dustin kept the whole group together.
And the storytellers, the historians.
Wow.
Yeah. Lucas was the ranger. The ranger's an independent, skilled hunter who uses their skills to hunt down enemies. And, you know, there was a bit where Lucas just kind of went off by himself to look for the gate, and 11 is for obvious reasons the sorcerer.
that's really cool.
Yeah like there's also like a really, I mean, this is kind of open to interpretation, but like in the very last episode when the kids are like they just finish up their Dungeons and Dragons game, like some of them were complaining to Mike like that was really short, like they were bringing up like plot points from the campaign, like what about the lost knight, what about the proud princess, what about the weird flowers in the cave. And a lot of people are speculating, like, well, this is just the creator. It's just, like, kind of taking a jab at the viewers. Like, hey, we know this is, like, a really short campaign. And the Lost Knight refers to Jim Hopper. The Proud Princess refers to 11. The Weird Flowers in the Cave refers to those eggs you saw on the Upside Down.
Yeah, they look like the Xenomorph eggs.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they referred to the Eggos and the thing in the end.
So, yeah, like, no, Dungeons & Dragons influence is running strong in the series.
And the thing is that he even said it was so short, and he says, what are you talking about? It was 10 hours, and the show is basically 8 hours long.
Right.
It's like this podcast. There's not enough to cover a short show.
Yeah.
Hey, so when they went through that portal, right, did you guys feel like that was echoing, like, the other side from Poltergeist or any of, like, the evil hell gates from, like, the movie The Gate or stuff like that? Gates were big in the 80s.
I feel like that was your favorite part because there was goo.
There was goo. And that was very the thing in Poltergeist, like that gate.
My favorite part of that gate is when that first guy goes in it and he gives Matthew Modine's hair helmet a look. And he goes like, ugh. Then he gets like resolve and then he goes in there and dies.
He wasn't actually disgusted by the grossness of the gate. He was disgusted by the hair helmet.
Yeah, he just looked back and went, I know there's hair under there.
He's like, whatever's on the other side of this gate.
That's why he volunteered to go.
Got to be better over here.
That's right.
And so, like, that Hellgate was neat, right? Because it seemed to be an organism itself, sort of. Like, the blob meets the thing, meets, like, that pink, gooey stuff from the Poltergeist bedroom gate that opened up towards the end of the movie. Like, it seemed to be, like, a living thing. And when they went into, I keep wanting to call it the further, the Upside Down, there was something organismal about the environment, almost like the lair in Aliens, how the lair didn't just look like a cave, it looked like bone and organ walls and stuff. Like, it felt like a nice callback to that weird stuff, but almost like the Upside Down was sentient.
Oh.
You know, and when you went through the portal, it regrew itself like it was healing or putting its fingers back together to close its hands or so, like, right? Like, it was responsive. It wasn't like in Stargate where there's just this portal and you walk through it and you disappear.
Yeah.
It was interactive.
The only thing that would have been better if he walked through the portal and French Stewart was there.
Hey, guys.
Okay, and it's only serious role ever.
But no, I think it was. I think there was. It definitely closed back up. It was a creature, I think, that led to the further Upside Down.
Yeah. You know, reminds me of like my most annoyed moment in the entire show when Jonathan and Nancy were out in the woods, you know, doing whatever.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Nancy just like sees like a portal. You know, keep in mind, like, a minute earlier, they just saw, like, a deer get, like, dragged off by, like, some unseen monster. And then she comes across, like, a portal in a tree. And, like, her first thought is to just crawl in there. Like, why would you do that? Like,
yeah.
First off, if there was a tree, that, yeah, I'll agree. That's
yeah, really, that annoyed me the most.
Really, because if that was a tree hole in a tree that big, yeah, she could fit in there, but it wouldn't be, like, just jumping in there to hide. That would be hard. It would take her like more than a few seconds to wedge herself in there. That was not a practical hiding space. And it would have had little crags in it and there could be creatures. We weren't doing that.
Ugh. Yeah, that's the one time where my wife and I were like, no.
Why would you
and you
that?
Know what? That also broke the characteristics that we see of the portal all the other times. And that's that. Again, the portal looks very alien organismal and interactive. It doesn't just disappear. In that case, there was a hole in the tree, and then the hole in the tree magically closed up with healing Deadpool bark.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't really match anything else that we saw of it, other than the fact that it can close itself back up. So, yeah, maybe that was, like, the one time they pulled a fast one on us.
Yeah. I mean, I forgave it, but I definitely was like, I was kind of like, no.
Well, but I mean, totally forgivable.
I want to say that there's like another time that it just, I just kind of had to question it. Like, I don't know, maybe you guys like saw something that I missed, but like when Hopper is in the, that government facility in like the last episode, like he basically sold out the kids, right?
Yeah.
It was like, wait, did he just tell the kids like where or tell the government agents like where the kids are hiding?
Yeah, he said where 11 was.
He was presented at the time a kind of convincing ultimatum where things would in fact be worse for everybody if we didn't find those kids, because only 11 has the ability to manage the situation, communicate and locate the creature on the other side, and help find the boy.
So he was putting his faith in 11, that she would somehow keep the kids safe or the boys safe?
Well, here's what he was hoping. The government officials grab all the kids and they bring them back. He breaks from his chains and he fist fights his way through the entire place.
Sure. Just have them all in one place. Be easier.
I thought he was just going to pull a Now You See Me and clap his hands, and all of a sudden Matthew Modine's hair helmet is handcuffed.
Yeah, it's like the knife. It's
maybe like the knife. Maybe Matthew Modine's hair helmet is the kryptonite to Jim Hopper's like a titanium fist.
Matthew Modine like bends down and he punches the hair and he breaks his hand.
Okay, hold on. If Matthew Modine is most closely echoing an evil version of Doc, right?
Yeah.
And we have basically our E.T. boy and his Goonie crew, and we have our fire starter heroine, right? And Nancy, to me, Nancy and Steve are basically Nancy and Glenn from Nightmare on Elm Street, with their discovery of things. Like, are there any other characters in this that made you think specifically of other characters in other movies?
I'm trying.
I'm asking this specifically because I couldn't place Hopper, but I want to say that Hopper is some combination of some major characters we've seen before, and I just couldn't place it. But maybe it's like the John Saxon Nancy's dad character almost, like the cop who eventually figures it out and makes some important stuff. So I don't know. I liked how a lot of these characters had aspects of these other characters from other movies that I'm mentioning, but they didn't feel like copying and pasting those characters. They felt like their own characters that happened to have these similar characteristics.
I want to say Hopper is a combination of Chief Brody and Indiana Jones.
Wait. Yeah.
Yeah. Although Jaws is from the 70s, but, you know, whatever.
That was still... And wasn't Assault from Precinct 13...
Sure. 70s?
Yeah.
That was 70. Oh, God. That was with. I know it was within a year of Halloween.
Right.
Well, Halloween was 77. 78?
77, 78?
Wait. Yeah, 78. Because I saw it when I was 16. Yeah, 78. Because H2O came out in 98.
I'm sitting in front of an answer machine right now. I don't know why I'm not just looking on the computer. 1976.
Wait. Oh, Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah, Assault on Precinct 13 was 76.
Close enough.
And then we'll see. Does anybody else have any other questions? Do you guys think Will is Will?
That's right. At the end, I want to. So
he sneezed out a snot bug,
which, by the way, reminded me of Class of Nukem High, Night of the Creeps, The Hidden, and Poltergeist 2. I loved that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he goes. He seems like a normal kid. He goes and pukes an evil slug parasite that's clearly from the Upside Down, right? Mm-hmm. And he looks like he is distinctly disturbed by the fact that he just did that. So the question is he just infected? Is something tagging along? Will he slowly transform? Will that slug slowly transform? But he brought something.
Yeah, and he let it go down a drain. He aliened that thing.
Yeah. It was really gross. No, he's definitely not the same. As to whether or not he turns into a monster, I want to say yes, actually, because I think that'd be interesting. I want to see how the group kind of deals with that, because I think it's been confirmed that there's going to be a season 2 of Stranger Things, and it's going to be a continuation of the story.
Are you sure that people liked it enough for there to be a season?
Listen, they gave Fuller House like a second season, all right? So I think Stranger Things is going to get a second season.
Can I ask a question, guys? In cruising around online, wherever it is that we're looking, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, just what we hear at work, has anyone actually heard a single negative review of Stranger Things? I've heard negative comments about, like, the, you know, the characters, but then they started loving them as the film, the things went on.
Just some snarky comments. Like, on Reddit.
I mean, I think nitpickers will nitpick, but over, I mean, the show itself, is, has anyone out there said, oh, Stranger Things sucks?
What were you saying last?
Oh, like, I've just read some snarky comments on Reddit, but, you know, that's to be expected.
Oh, gosh.
But really, as far as, like, actual, like, negative reviews, I just, I don't think I've come across even one.
So, can you think of, like, anything else ever where you could say that? And I'm being very serious. I'm not, I've been thinking about this all week. I can't think of anything that ever had basically across the board positive reviews and a complete paucity of outright negative reviews. There's almost always a hater. And so far, I haven't found one. Now, I haven't gone and looked negative reviews.
I mean, there's got to be like a Pixar movie or something.
Yeah.
Like, I'll bet I could find something online if I typed in terrible review of Stranger Things. But I just mean coming across it organically, normally I find negative reviews. This seems to be one of the most loved things to hit the internet and TV, like, ever.
So, like, a common trend, like, when you read, like, all these positive reviews, that, like, I guess, like, a lot of people who kind of grew up during that time or, like, the same age, you know, as the kids, like, in the 80s, like, they all say the same thing. Like, man, they really nailed the 80s vibe. Like, they really kind of, like, took us back to, like, 80s kind of suburbia. Like, it's not like, you know, 80s kind of, you know, Miami, like, Don Johnson, just, like, shooting, like, cocaine dealers. Like, no, it's just, you know, they really... They really kind of nailed everything, like, about the 80s, like the Pinto she drove, like the Eggos, like hitting the TV. And it's just like, oh, calling your science teacher because you can't just Google stuff. Although I don't think people actually did that, but still.
Oh, yeah. Remember when Dustin is calling the teacher on a Saturday night?
The deprivation tank?
Yeah. His teacher's on a date, and he's, you know, it's an early date because he was trying to impress his date by saying, oh, the special effects in the thing are microwaved bubble gum and heated latex. And, like, you know, like, I'm science, I'm so smart, be turned on by me. And he's like, listen, guys, isn't it a little late? Shouldn't we talk about this on Monday? It's like, Mr. So-and-so, didn't you always tell us that creativity is a door? Why are you keeping that creativity door locked?
That was great.
And it was the cutest thing ever.
Yeah, that was like, awesome.
And these kids did a good job of not being childishly cute a lot of the time. And at that time, they were. And I was just like, I wanted to give Dustin the biggest hug right then.
Yeah.
Why are you keeping this creativity door locked? And then he must have been on the phone with the kid for an hour explaining how to make a deprivation tank in a stand-up pool in a college gymnasium with 1,500 pounds of salt.
Can I just say how smart that science teacher was? Because not only did he know how to make a deprivation tank, he also kind of knew how to explain, like, the concept of parallel dimensions to, like, a bunch of 11- and 12-year-olds. It was just like, wow, this guy is, like, why is he teaching middle school?
because the script said so.
Yeah.
And also the parents were not very tentative at many different moments. Like, they were banging around that house, and the mom's like, what's going on?
Ooh.
Yeah. But, I mean, whatever. That's, like, a classic thing in 80s films.
Well, that was, like, a really big basement, to be
honest. Yeah, that was huge.
Yeah. So, that's, like, an apartment-sized basement.
That's, like, a mother-in-law suite.
Yeah. I don't know.
So, good. How would you guys, like, rate this show?
Oh, man.
Like, I feel like I'd give it a 99 out of 10.
Now, are we rating it as a movie or
a 99
as a,
out of 10. That's what I give it.
Are we rating it as a movie, a TV
show? I give it
show?
An
A.
An A? An A plus out of 5?
Yeah. No, well, you can rate it, right? You don't need number. I give it an A.
Yeah, I got an A. I got 99. I got a 2 thumbs up. Yes.
I'd give it a 97 because Hopper didn't fist fight that gargantuan Bogawaffen, whatever his name is.
Bogawaffen! I want it to be called that now, a Bogawaffen. That's such a Lord of the Rings creature.
That's a good one right there.
Jim Hopper rides in the battle with no weapons, just his fist.
Just Tampa windmilling.
Hey, speaking of Jim Hopper, I hope they kind of explore like kind of that thread they left hanging with him, like because at the end of the episode, yeah, he got into that car of like those black suits, and yeah. You know they didn't really explain it. Like, you know, does he have like, you know, a government kind of, you know, CIA past or something? Like maybe that's where he learned to fist fight so well. Like
yeah.
maybe he has government training or something.
Maybe they trained him against Bogdanoff.
Yeah. I mean, they did say he had big city experience. Maybe that's what they were talking about.
I want a prequel about his big city fist fighting.
Yeah.
Maybe he was Channing Tatum in that movie Fighting when he was younger.
Oh, yeah.
And he fought Kung Lee.
Yeah.
All right, so what other things could they... What other possible plot lines could they kind of explore in the second season? What other kind of 80s influences could they tap into?
Can I tell you something, guys?
Yeah.
I'm not really looking forward to the second season.
No?
No.
Are you worried that, like, now that it's popular, they're going to get a little too into their own cliches kind of thing?
Well, if they do the second season, they need to do it right. And I don't think they – right, so look at True Detective season one. The guy, Nick Paletti, spent years writing it, yeah? It was a success.
Right.
Right, 10 episodes, 8 episodes, whatever. And then they're like, okay, in a year from now, we need an entire True Detective season 2. So the guy spent years writing this first season, and it was amazing. And then they're like, all right, give us something new. So he had to do it really quickly. So this one, I just hope it doesn't become too self-aware. And I think there's talent behind the camera, so there's a chance. But, you know, they can't wait 2 years because these kids will be older.
Yeah,
like, right.
So... You know, I don't think it's necessary. I'd watch it.
It's going to be the Matrix Part 2.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess.
Stranger Things Reloaded.
Motorcycle chases and raves.
Yeah.
I think it could go the horror route, you know, that kid is something in him, so it goes like slasher, but that's not really the vibe of that. Like,
I'm thinking it's going to go more Night of the Creeps, Shiver, Slither kind of things, because he's internally infected.
Hey, wait, can Jim Hopper get drunk?
His muscle mass is probably way too high. That's also why he can't swim. He just sinks. Like, they would have needed to use 4,500 pounds of salt for him to float in that.
He'd have to fist fight his way through the side of the pool. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, like, it'll be interesting because some people were kind of hoping it'd be an anthology kind of concept. Like, I guess a lot of people, like Mark, like felt like the first season kind of wrapped things up nicely. Like, the ending, it wasn't like too vague or ambiguous, where it felt like kind of,
yeah,
you know,
they left a lot of things though wide open. It's not a regular one thing cliffhanger or one thing twist. There were like 8 little twists.
Yeah, I just don't think they're going to have the time. Like, this is going to sound crazy too, but like Downton Abbey, the first season is amazing. And then the second season, they're like, okay, give us double the amount of episodes in a year after Julian Fellows had planned on that. Walking Dead season 1 was really good, but it was 6 episodes. And then they're like, okay, give us 12 episodes and you have the same budget and you have to get it out quicker. Yeah. So, like, I worry about second seasons.
Or maybe it'll be like Seinfeld, where it just goes on for like 9 seasons.
Oh, my goodness. Or, you know, it could be like Fargo season 2, which is a prequel. I guess it's different characters, so anthology could work.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, like do a parallel story even that continues this story but with different people.
I want to know the story of Matthew Modine's hair.
Right. Just that it can just be like one episode, really, like a whole episode on his hair.
That came from the upside down of the upside down.
When they first made that government experimental facility, his hair was the first experiment.
Like, if like the first failure, you know that big creature that's all orange hair, that the guy who talks like this from the Bugs Bunny cartoons?
Yeah.
It's the big hair monster that doesn't have arms, it just has two sneakers. Like, they took that monster, turned it into a Donald Trump hairpiece, and hybridized it onto Matthew Modine's head.
Like, that's a battering ram. If he could be in the Lord of the Rings and knock down walls like those orcs.
You mean that troll that broke its neck? Right?
Yeah. Well, he wouldn't break its neck because he would just go straight through.
Because the hair, each one of those hairs can absorb 5 pounds of force.
Yeah, he would just have to like clink into it probably like 2,000 times, but he'd get there.
Yeah.
It's because of the van der Waals reactions, like on a gecko's little tiny hairs on its pads.
So is the hair helmet the immovable object in the Jim Hopper's fists or the unstoppable force?
That's right.
They just meet the world together.
That's how the Upside Down was formed. Hopper punched Modine's hair, and the world just had a rip in it.
Then 11 was born. Yep. Oh, man. Wow. I think we just came up with the idea for the second season.
Cool.
It's a prequel. All right. Yeah. I think that's a podcast, actually. Stranger Things, I think it's safe to say we all liked it for the most part, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey,
fantastic.
Hey.
All right. So before we sign off, are there any plugs you want to make?
We could give it an upside down V and put a line through it.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, I want you to listen to John Lazavath is eating. Don't listen to episode 13 because it's soup. And I don't know what, I think you had like a cold that day, so you couldn't breathe through your nose. So it's a lot of slurping, a lot of heavy breathing.
Yeah, the, you know, I shouldn't have got the, I shouldn't have gotten the minestrone. Like, yeah. I never liked minestrone, so.
Wait, hold on. Don't listen to John Lazavath's episode 13, but do listen to our episode 13, because that was the first episode out of, like, 10 where we ever referred to tackling someone who was dipping an axe into a fish.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
Because that was Planes, Trains, and Chris Evans.
Yeah!
So I'd like to throw out a thanks to Billy Crash from Crash Palace and The Last Knock, Bill Meeker, another reviewer, and The Wonderful World of Horror, which is a Facebook page. All three of them were sharing some of our material just in the last week. Not soliciting it. They're just good people in the horror community, and thanks a lot to them. And I'd like to start a 5-episode campaign saying this episode will hopefully soon be brought to you by Red Bull and Domino's.
Domino's!
Yeah.
Domino's Pizza, Domino's!
You guys ever use their, like, their pizza tracker when you order a pizza online?
No.
Like, you just described, like, a homing device from Total Recall or Time Cop. What are you talking about?
It's, no, it's really cool. Like, you see, like, the little cartoon guy, like, put toppings on your pizza, then he puts the your pizza in your oven, and then it was like, oh, my oven's being baked right
this
now.
Is like when Quaid had a towel on his head and a bug up his nose, and he could see like the red blinking light on the computer screen.
Yeah.
You're describing Total Recall.
Yeah. Honestly, folks, we're not being paid by Domino's. We wish we were.
But we will eventually, hopefully, after 5 episodes... Domino's and Red Bull. Thank you very much.
Sure. As always, folks, check out SharkDropper.com, where you can find me on other shows if you haven't gotten sick of me already. So, yeah, SharkDropper.com. Check that out. And
The Lamb.
Yes.
The large ass
movie blog.
Yeah.
The large ass of movie blogs.
Sure.
And please go to Domino's and Red Bull's Twitter and Facebook pages and say, hey, we love movies, films, and flicks. Thank you guys for sponsoring them.
And guys, if you're fans of the pod, I know I say this a lot, but if you get a chance, please rate, review, and subscribe. We'd love to hear what you think. And just write beautiful things. And slam John Lazavath's soup-eating pod.
It's a lot like Highlander. Every time you give us enough reviews that we go up above the next person on iTunes, there's like crackling energy and like, you know, there can be only one.
Right.
I think This American Life is currently, what, the Connor McCloud. That Ira Glass, man. He's, you don't want to mess with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to battle him.
No. All right, folks. For my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Fist fighting legend.
And John Lemongood.
Dominoes! Dominoes! It's a domino!
Gotta get jingle.
Yeah.
I've been your host, John Lawson. Thank you so much for listening.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! 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 This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.